This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Ryan Clark, our ESPN NFL analyst, about the one player he owes an apology, apparently, to right now, coming off of week one. We'll get to that in a little bit here. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty hanging out here today on an NFL Tuesday. And Chris, the show has been derailed by the word elite. And like, I know in the depths of my soul, this elite conversation, it is hacky sports talk radio, but I'll be damned if it doesn't drive me up a wall constantly. And I think I figured out, the most interesting quarterback of 2021 because of that. So we can get to that in a little bit here. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN, because we got people trying to match Cliff. Chris, you did what I think is one of the most valuable things on this show. You ticked off our producer, Cliff. Every time he gets mad, it is great content for us.
Oh, man, he is feeling away right now about Dak Prescott being elite territory. He does not like it one bit. But he knows damn well if Dak Prescott was his quarterback, he'd feel a lot better about his Eagles in 2021 than he does right now.
Hurts era, just baby. I'm rocking with Jalen. It's the Hurts era. Let's go.
Wow.
QB1. I'm good. And yo, listen, right. On my birthday, the Eagles are playing the boys. I expect Hurts and them, or Monday Night Football the night after. I expect, yeah, actually, Chris, that's when we're going to do our bet for the wing challenge too as well. As we watch my Eagles beat your Cowboys in the hotel room at the Doubletree.
That's two easy wins for me, MJG. I can't wait for it.
Literally hungry just thinking about it right now. Again, Cliff has bet me and Chris Canty, two guys that spend a lot of our life north of 300 pounds. We couldn't eat 50 wings in a sitting?
50 each. I don't think y'all going to do it. I really don't think. Cliff, like, during the progression of a whole entire game, I don't think you'll do it.
Cliff, this is sad. I thought this was beneath you, but apparently I got to recalibrate some of my thoughts here. In the meantime, though, we got to get you the top five, bottom five from the weekend that was. We take a look back at every NFL weekend on Tuesday, give you the five best things and the five worst things. Today, I will be handling the top five. Chris will be handling the bottom five. So, Cliff, why don't we get this thing started? First up.
Number five.
There we go. All right, now it's a party here. All right, the top five things from the NFL weekend that was. Chris, I got to start this one off with Sam Darnold's revenge game. Sam Darnold, now the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers, had his old team roll into town, and all he did, just, I would say, look at the first half. Sam Darnold against the blitz, 8 of 9 for 94 yards and a touchdown in the first half. He completed 55.6% of his passes against the blitz last season, 32nd among 35 qualified QBs, and passed for 279 yards in this game, more than he had in any game last season. The most he got last year, 266 against the Pats in week 17. So I thought this looked like a better version of him, Chris, a guy that we had seen struggle for so long in the Adam Gase era in New York.
Yeah, what a difference an offensive coordinator makes, right? I mean, under Adam Gase, they were the worst offense in the National Football League. He goes down there to Carolina with Matt Rhule. He's got Christian McCaffrey back healthy, and all of a sudden he has a career day. So a lot of those passes were short passes to Christian McCaffrey. CMC had 90 yards receiving, so that makes a world of difference. But also the playmakers at his disposal, DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, both came through big for him. I think the change of scenery does Sam Darnold some good. Still worried about some of the turnovers. You saw that in the first half when that fourth down, he fumbled an exchange, ended up giving the ball back to the Jets. But all in all, a really good day for Sam Darnold.
Number four,
let's head out west. I got to give a shout-out to my bald brother-in-arms here. Tyler Lockett came on home this offseason. He decided to shave the rest of that hair, and what did it do? It unlocked a man who went off for 4 catches, 100 yards, and 2 touchdowns this weekend. Since 2016, Tyler Lockett has 17 receiving touchdowns of over 20 air yards. That's tied with DeAndre Hopkins for 5th most in the NFL over that span. Chris, he has activated. Him and Russ continue to be one of the best quarterback receiver tandems in the league during their time together.
MGJ, I keep trying to figure out why people don't put more respect on Tyler Lockett's name. I mean, the guy just produces every single year. He comes up with big-time plays. You saw that one against the Colts where he had that over-the-shoulder Willie Mays type of catch. But, I mean, he's a deep threat every single year for the Seattle Seahawks. But more importantly, he's consistent. He's somebody that Russell Wilson can rely on. So I'm trying to figure out why people don't put more respect on Tyler Lockett's name, because the dude is a flat out baller.
Respect to the short king.
Number three.
Respect to the short king, Tyler Lockett. Number three, though, I'm going to just even whittle this down to the right sliver. Justin Herbert on third down this weekend. On third down, he was 13 of 16 for a 160 and a touchdown. 12 of his 13 completions resulted in a first down or a touchdown, and that 12 third down completions resulting in first downs are the most since Andrew Luck did it in 2012 right now. Chris, also this weekend, he now only trails Patrick Mahomes on the list of players throwing for the most yards through their first 16 starts in NFL history. He has been as hot as anybody, and he doesn't appear to be cooling off in year two.
No question about it. I mean, Justin Herbert, that touchdown pass that he threw on third down, that happened after he threw an interception to begin the fourth quarter, and his team was able to get him the ball back, and he had the resolve to be able to make that play. But overall, I mean, an impressive performance, but I don't think anybody else expected anything less from Justin Herbert after the rookie season that he had. I think the franchise made sure to do the right thing this offseason, which is upgrade that offensive line, bringing in Corey Linsley to play center from the Green Bay Packers, and then drafting Rashawn Slater in the first round. Build a wall in front of your franchise quarterback. That's exactly what they did. And now you're going to get the return on investment.
Even able to weather the storm, Brian Bulaga goes down at right tackle early in that game. Storm Norton holds it down. I'm with you, Chris. We haven't had a solid O-line there in a long time. Finally helping out their guy behind center. It is Canty and Golic Jr. It is top five, bottom five from the NFL weekend that was. Let's get towards the summit here. Number two.
Number two.
Normally, I would leave the defensive praise to you, Chris, but even I got to shout out Chandler Jones and what the hell he did this weekend. Five sacks in their game against Tennessee as they pulled an upset in week one. He's the first player with five sacks in three quarters since at least the year 2000. And he ties Hassan Reddick for the most sacks in a single game since individual stats became a stat in 1982. And Chris, all of this comes after an offseason where he was telling the Cardinals, you either got to pay me or trade me somewhere else here. So hurt feelings he turned into, hurt feelings for Taylor Lewan on the other side of him, quite frankly.
Oh, no question. I mean, the performance was so dominant, Taylor Lewan had to get a guy a shout out on social media after the game for exposing him. But I mean, Chan Jones had it all working against that Titans offensive line. He was going inside, he was going outside, he was running over top of those dudes. He had the chop club, he had the side scissors, and he had the stab. I mean, he's just got a full array of moves, and he put them all on display on Sunday. Chan Jones should be the front runner for defensive player of the year after that performance. That's how dominant that dude was.
Finally getting the respect that he deserves. Hopefully. He's been out in the desert so long, we just stopped talking about him. Maybe this will force some folks' hands.
Number one.
Number one, though, Chris, I said this yesterday. The biggest recalibration I had to do after week one was what I thought the New Orleans Saints were capable of. Jameis Winston's Saints now. Drew Brees off doing Notre Dame games and, quite frankly, doing a great job with NBC. He was the only good part of that Notre Dame-Toledo game, but I digress. Jameis Winston became the first quarterback in NFL history to throw five touchdowns and zero interceptions in a season opener in his first career start with a new team. He was dynamite. And Chris, the best part about it was he gave us exactly what we had been wondering about. Can he go out there and be controlled? He averaged 7 air yards per pass on Sunday. It was the third lowest in any start of his career. He was taking what the defense gave him. He played within Sean Payton's offense, and it paid off well for that team. Yeah, he was like 178 yards with those 5 touchdowns, but the Saints' job and goal was to reel him in, and through week one, great returns on that.
Oh, no question about it. But, Mike, I will say this. Jameis did put some big balls on tape that defense has to account for. Seeing them be able to stretch the field in that offense is not something that we've come accustomed to, because Drew Brees just didn't have the arm talent to do it. But Jameis Winston is a different animal in terms of that element, being able to provide that for that offense. He tried to throw an interception in that game, but thanks to his Azarius Smith roughing the passer, he got called back. But all in all, Jameis played with some restraint, and that was the big question coming into this season, whether Sean Payton could coach the turnovers out of him. And so far, so good for the New Orleans Saints and Jameis Winston through week one.
So there you have it, the top five in the NFL weekend that was Sam Darnold's revenge game, Tyler Lockett and the Seahawks offense, Justin Herbert's big day on third down, Chandler Jones, and Jameis Winston Saints. We will get you the bottom five from the weekend that was from Chris Canty coming up in about an hour here. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit progressive.com. 888-729-3776. 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll get to more of your calls as the word elite and Derek Carr have somehow derailed our show. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
I don't know why the word elite does this to people. We just had the conversation earlier in this show, a nuanced conversation, me and Chris Canty, about how elite is reserved for like a top four or five guys here, and all of a sudden, because we don't want to extend that to Derek Carr, we're the bad guys here at Canty and Golic Jr. Chris, I can't understand it. I will not understand it.
It does not make any sense to me, MGJ. No sense at all. I mean, we gave Derek Carr his props for the way he played last night. Yet we still acknowledge when it comes to that elite territory, he's not in that mix for top five, top six quarterbacks in the NFL. He's just not there yet. But for some reason, that E word, it just brings out the worst in football fans across the country, man. A lot of people will lighten up the phone lines trying to get at us about this. Don't get at me about Derek Carr being elite because he's not elite. Let's stop that conversation right now.
No, and what makes a quarterback considered in that category is interesting. Like, we had the argument here about this relative to Dak Prescott, and Cliff, our producer, threw Kyler Murray's name up over him. And while I don't think I'm there yet, Chris, I think Kyler Murray's the most interesting quarterback going into this year for that reason, right? Like, what we saw in week one and what's been bubbling there for a while with him and Cliff, I feel like we've been waiting for that thing to finally get to a level where we could say this about a guy who was the offensive rookie of the year, but hasn't really taken that next step. This feels like it could be the Kyler Murray year, and I think he's the most interesting guy for me.
Well, in order for that to happen, right, your team has to have overall success. Like, you've got to take that next step. In his rookie year, I think they went 5-11-1, and then last year they were 8-8. So, I mean, it takes some time, and it actually takes winning at the highest levels of the sport before people view you through that lens. I mean, if you want to go back to 2016 with Matt Ryan, I mean, he got that MVP. His team went to the Super Bowl. The year before that, Cam Newton, MVP, his team went to the Super Bowl. So it does take that level of team success before people are willing to give you the nod and call you amongst the best quarterbacks in the game today.
I will say, I think people with special physical abilities kind of cut the line when it comes to some of that. Because I'm with you, we need a resume if you're going to be a guy like Matt Ryan. But for the Lamar Jacksons, Patrick Mahomes of the world, and even for Kyler, who made some throws that there aren't a lot of humans on the planet that can this weekend, I think some of those guys get to cut the line. But speaking of the line, the phone line's jammed up right now, 888-729-3776. Let's go to Sean in Virginia. Sean, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What do you got? Oh, Sean, you there? All right, let's go on to the next one here. Let's try Eric in New Jersey. Eric, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. Hopefully you talk.
Gentlemen, huge fan of both of you guys separately and together.
Appreciate it, man.
Jojo, first we got to get the official song of the show, Knuck If You Buck.
Mm. All right, I like where you're...
I ain't mad at that one.
I like where your head's at on that one. We'll have everyone in here fighting before we all know it here.
As far as, like, elite goes, like, it's just lost all its meaning now. But when it comes to Dak Prescott, I've been a Giants fan since before I was born, and there's only two Sundays a year I don't hate Dak Prescott. I love the guy. As far as Derek Carr and Matt Ryan go, they're kind of the same person. Give Derek Carr a ring, then you might as well throw Joe Flacco in there, too. They're almost all the same person with the weapons they have. Without their weapons, they're nothing.
Appreciate the call. What is it, semantic satiation, where you say a word so much that it loses all its meaning? Like, I think he's right on that one with us and the word elite, by the way. But, I guess that's an interesting way to frame all of this too, Chris, is for you, when you were a player, a quarterback that you had to stay up extra thinking about game planning about, and if you're a fan, the quarterback you don't want to see lining up under center for the other team, like, that seems like a pretty interesting way to gauge all this.
No question about it, and you brought up an interesting part of this conversation, which is the dominant physical traits. Like, we're all enamored with these do-everything quarterbacks, the guys that are the dual threats, the guys that can run as fast as any position player that's out there on the field and that can throw it a country mile, but also high-level winning and the intangibles that lead to overall team success, those things have to be at the forefront of this conversation too. Like when I was playing, like the guys that you didn't want to play against, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Why? Because those guys win all the time. Because those guys elevate the talent around them. Like those are the guys that are the ones that are deserving of being in the elite category. And so when we start looking at the landscape of the National Football League now, I mean, there really only are about five or six guys that deserve that tab as being an elite guy, and the rest of those guys fall outside of that. So if you're not one of the top five or six quarterbacks, you're not getting the elite label from me.
Yeah, and Tom Brady and Peyton are perfect examples of what I'm talking about, because for those guys, Peyton was joking about it last night in the broadcast a bunch on E2 with him and Eli, saying, I don't feel like I should be able to talk about Lamar Jackson's rushing attempts because I could never do that because I didn't have that tool in my bag. And we've seen, I saw Dan Orlovsky do a breakdown on this, quarterbacks that can threaten you with their legs and move around tend to, especially early in their careers, toss fewer interceptions than a lot of their counterparts because defenses have more to account for because it creates more space. And I think it gets you some of that leeway. Let's get to Sean in Virginia. Sean, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What you got?
All right, guys. Sorry, I'm back. I'm here now. So, Chris, man, Dak Prescott is 29 and 25 since after his first year. He has.
So Sean, we're just gonna get rid of his first year. We're not even gonna include that. That didn't happen.
Oh yeah, we're gonna ignore Ezekiel Elliott, right?
Okay. Wow. All right.
And then he has only thrown over 4,000 yards once, and he's only thrown more than 30 touchdowns once.
Sean, you keep laughing because I feel like you're undermining your argument a little bit with some of the things that you're trying to cite here. I mean, just throwing out the guy's rookie year when he won Offensive Rookie of the Year, to me, that just seems like you're missing the forest through the trees. You're not evaluating the full body of work. And when it comes to Dak Prescott, the guy has shown us that he is a winner. Like I said it earlier in the show, the floor for the Dallas Cowboys when Dak Prescott is healthy, no matter what else is going on, is 8-8. Like, this is a winning football team with him under center. And so, after watching what they did on Thursday night, there's no doubt in my mind that this team is bound to be back in the playoffs in 2021, and dare I say poised to be able to make a run once they get there. Dak Prescott has ascended to that elite territory. Again, I have a hard time naming five or six quarterbacks in the National Football League that are better than Dak Prescott.
Chris, I will say this. I think with Dak, a lot of people are still operating on the early software of when he came in. Because you heard him mention his rookie year. You heard him mention Ezekiel Elliott. Most people associate Dak Prescott with one of the best offensive lines, if not the best offensive line in the league, and a running game and all these things around him. Like, that's not it anymore. It is Dak propping up the rest of this. I know he's got great wide receivers, but everything else has changed so much and turned over so much. The defense, we got questions about so much that I feel like now we have to make sure the framework around the way we talk about Dak is different, Cliff.
It's crazy because that's like the ceiling to 8-8, right? Like, isn't that what the Cowboys do every single year, Chris?
No, I mean, they had a couple double-digit win seasons in there with Dak Prescott, right? They've got a 13-win season. They've got a 10-win season in there. So, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that being the ceiling for this team. I mean, if the offensive line is healthy and Dak has the weapons at his disposal, you're talking about a team that's capable of winning a playoff game. I feel like that should be the expectation based on what Jerry Jones invested in this team this upcoming season, and there's nothing to sway me from that based on what we saw on Thursday night. So, again, when it starts coming to Dak Prescott, you have a hard time saying that you take six other quarterbacks over him just because of the full package. Not only what he has in terms of the physical attributes, but also the intangibles and how he's changed the culture with the Dallas Cowboys.
Lots more on that. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But coming up next, one of our best NFL analysts says he owes a current player an apology. Tell you who that is next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
You can't play this and expect people not to just start flipping tables, punching dudes in the face. Like, Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Chris, you could turn this song on at any time during any place around our locker room when I was in college, and immediately just a whole flock of dudes come over and start mobbing. It was that
oh,
serious.
Oh, no question.
Every time.
You know it had to be a mosh pit too, right? Guys pushing each other back and forth, getting hyped up. This used to be one of our go-tos at VA right before we run out of the stadium and get out there on the field. This was one of those songs. I don't know how you can't get turned up when you hear this come on. Like, if you didn't, you didn't have a pulse. And more importantly, you probably didn't belong on the football field with us. That's how we were getting down at VA. This song is one of the anthems, no question about it.
Ryan Clark joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline, ESPN NFL analyst and former collegiate and NFL safety. RC, when you guys were getting down at LSU, what was that last song before you came out of the tunnel?
Well, first off, I want to go back to the song you just played. Obviously, that was Snoop and Pete and all those guys. And, you know, they would always be in our rec center. I have a little different memory of college and that song. When I hear that song and I think about that song, I think about making sure that whatever club I was in, I had my back to the wall because a fight was going to start. Like, y'all using it as what y'all ran out onto the field to. That's not what I was worried about. I was worried about the first person that was going to get punched because that's what normally happens when that song was played in the club. But the song that, like, you know, I'm from Louisiana, bro. We was all Cash Money brothers. You know what I mean? It was Hot Boys, Juvie, Wayne, Turk, BG. You know, you're a little young for that, Go. Like, you don't know nothing about that. But Christian know a little bit about that.
Already, 400 degrees is a go-to. That 400 degrees
exactly.
is a classic.
Exactly. So that was all we would listen to, man. That was all we cared about at the time. And then, obviously, you know how it was with Pete. P dropped the album every Tuesday. You was going to get Cain and Abel, Ghetto Commission, Mia X, Mystical Fiend, somebody. And so we had all the Louisiana music you could stand when we were in college.
Not hurting down there at any bit along the way here. Not surprising in the least for RC and those guys getting ready to go at LSU. So, RC, let's flip it over to the NFL fields. We had Monday Night Football last night. And Las Vegas manages to come back somehow, some way, and beat the Ravens in overtime. Were you surprised at the lack of adjustment offensively or defensively for Baltimore that ended up getting them late in this game?
Not at all. I mean, has Baltimore made, and Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, made an offensive adjustment in the last 3 years? Have you seen one, Golet? You seen one, Chris? I ain't seen one.
No.
You know, this is who they are. And now you're trying to be that when you don't have J.K. Dobbins, when you don't have Gus Edwards, and when Rashard Bateman, your first-round draft pick, isn't able to play because of injury, and Alejandro Villanueva is getting whipped by Max Crosby, Yannick Ngakoue coming off the other side. I mean, it was just a series of fortunate events for the Baltimore Ravens. And then yet, Lamar Jackson is so dynamic. He almost finds a way to win the game. And truly, it was his two fumbles that allowed the Las Vegas Raiders to stay in it. And so when you look at this team, they're going to have to do something different. You're going to have to protect Lamar Jackson in a different way. I'm never scared when Lamar Jackson is either running the football on a called run or if he's running the football in a scramble drill. Never nervous, because I know that Lamar Jackson is so elusive, so slippery, so talented, he's not going to allow people to tee off on him. But what I saw in the pocket last night worries me. When he can't protect himself, when he's in position to get rolled up on, when he's in position to get smashed. And so they're going to have to do some different things with the play action pass, keeping Mark Andrews in, waiting to get ball back off of injury, because if you can't protect Lamar Jackson, then you have no franchise. You have no opportunity to win. And when you watched that game last night, that was the most concerning part about it to me.
RC, looking at the other side of that, that Raiders defensive line was getting off the rock. Yannick Ngakoue, Max Crosby, Carl Nassib. I mean, listen, that was a big question, what this defense would be under Gus Bradley, their new defensive coordinator. As impressive as it was, are you buying that this is who that Raiders defense is going to be, or was that a product of the Baltimore Ravens offense being shorthanded?
I mean, you know what it is, Chris. You sometimes need that, right? You need an opportunity to play some people that are down a little bit, but I think that's who they are up front. You know, I think Max Crosby is one of those dudes who's going to put constant pressure on the quarterback. Yannick Ngakoue, we've seen him do it before. And we know Gus Bradley understands defense. I think the smart move was to move Jonathan Abram to the strong safety. Now you don't have him in the middle of the field wildcatting and abandoning zone because you get Morig from TCU. They still scare me a little bit on the corner. Obviously, Casey Haywood has been doing it for a long time. He's really good. But, you know, Trayvon Mullins last night gave up some plays. And, you know, it's time for him to make that next step. It was an early second-round draft pick from, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. But I feel like this defense is good, but it's not great. But it doesn't have to be.
right? If they could protect the way they did last night, if you can see Derek Carr perform the way he did against Cover Zero late in that game, make some of those throws down the football field. Obviously, Darren Waller is an absolute star. Edwards made some catches late. Hunter Renfrow, for all that he is, for looking like, you know, Darren off of B-Witch and all these different things, the dude is very good in the slot. And now you add some other pieces to that offense, I think this team could be really good. What's your problem, though, is that you play in the AFC West, and I believe the Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs are the two teams that make it into the playoffs out of that division.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to ESPN NFL analyst Ryan Clark. And RC, I saw you tweet earlier that you owe Keenan Allen an apology still. Why is that?
So the offseason came, right? And I was actually looking at the All-Pro list. I don't know why. I was bored sitting at the house. So I just asked a third down question. And the third down question was, of these receivers, and they were the All-Pros, you know, and I always put Odell Beckham Jr. and everything, well, because he's Odell Beckham Jr. And so, and I love him, and he went to LSU. And so I'm listing these guys, and somebody just random tweets something about Keenan Allen. And I was basically just like, well, these were the top receivers in the league. You know, like, these dudes had better stats than Keenan Allen. That's why I used them, because it wasn't excluding Keenan Allen. I just didn't include him. I'm like, but if he's your pick, he could be your pick. And so we kind of get into this Twitter conversation, and I was very nice about it. I was like, nah, dog. I was like, you a dog, man. But, like, these dudes were better last year. And when you watch Keenan Allen on third down yesterday against the Washington football team, dog, he was absolutely perfect. He found every zone. He ran every route precisely at exactly the time he needed to run it. Every stem, every stick, every sit down was absolutely perfect. It seemed like he and Justin Herbert were tied together, not necessarily just in the play call, but in their brains and their understanding of seeing the defense. And so, yeah, man, I would do an apology. Like, he's probably, if I had to pick a guy that I want running routes to get third and medium, third and intermediates, it's going to be Keenan Allen, and Keenan Allen all day.
Hard to disagree with that after that performance, like you said, and really the entire body of work when that dude is healthy. Check out Ryan Clark at RealRClark25 on Twitter and on the DC and RC podcast, wherever you download your podcast. RC, we'll talk to you soon, all right, man?
My man, have a good one.
Awesome stuff from Ryan Clark. I did have someone during that segment as we were playing C-Murder and Snoop Dogg tweet, the VP of Chop Stars tweets in, no lie, I almost flipped my damn truck just now. So we're going to try and keep everyone safe and hear from you at the same time. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. On the quarterback you think has the best chance to improve their stock in the 2021 season, and has the word elite lost all its meaning at this point? We'll get to that next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Dan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We're brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward, Goodyear, more driven. And we've got Chris Canty's bottom five of the NFL weekend that was still coming up. And current Rams wide receiver DeSean Jackson going to join us here. Got a podcast coming out and is going to help us relive one of the more heartbreaking moments for a lot of people in this room.
I don't know why you wanted to bring that up, man. Why you want to revisit such a painful memory for me, man. I thought you were on your way to being a good teammate right up until this moment in the show. Right until this point in the show.
Chris, I just got to practice and get reps up for when Notre Dame plays Virginia during this year.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like,
oh, yeah.
We don't want to pull something when we get to that week.
See, there you go, man. Again, you want to bring that up. I know that's down the road in November, man, but I'd like to leave that in the distant future. I don't want to start thinking about that now because I'm a little bit nervous about where your Notre Dame Irish are.
I'm nervous about where they are. We almost got beat by Toledo. I am very worried
fair
about
point.
Things right now.
Fair point. Fair point. And we did just get the dub over Illinois. Not that that's saying much, but. You know, we'll see what happens.
Hey, I didn't have any issues with that DJAC moment. I felt A-okay. That was amazing for me.
Man, see, this isn't surprising, Chris.
Yeah, all around bad guys, man. I'm surrounded by bad guys on this show. We got the show off to a good start, first week and a half, and then right here on this moment, after week one on a Tuesday, you guys want to go do this to me. I don't understand it.
The petty starts leaking in like carbon monoxide right now. And when you smell it, it's already too late here. Now, Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. One of the things that'll be interesting to talk to DeSean Jackson about is his quarterback, Matt Stafford, one of the faces in new places for this upcoming NFL season out there with the Rams. And Chris, you and I were kicking around some names because we've had this conversation around Elite come up again. And, you know, it started with Keyshawn Johnson on the morning show mentioning Derek Carr as Elite. And it got us to thinking, though, about the quarterbacks that actually have a chance to move this season, to really improve their stock in the way that we look at them. So I want to look at five names here, and I want to hear what you think from this group. Who might actually have the chance to improve their stock the most in the way that we view them as a public? Because I can look at week one and say these five quarterbacks all had really strong games in spots where we weren't sure we were going to get. Teddy Bridgewater, Kyler Murray, Jameis Winston, Jalen Hurts, and Sam Darnold. What do you make of that group?
I think that's a solid group. Now, if we're talking about stock up, the one that would kind of concern me would be Sam Darnold. I feel like he's more of a Bitcoin than a dividend-producing blue-chip stock. But in terms of having the physical skill sets, like, it's all there. The biggest question was, could Sam cut down on some of the turnovers that we saw him with the Adam Gase-led offense? So, I mean, he had the big balls to DJ Moore and to Robbie Anderson. That was impressive. He checked it down to Christian McCaffrey. That's never a bad thing to do. But, I mean, overall, I thought it was a good performance for him for the first time out in Matt Rhule's offense. But the other four quarterbacks that are on that list, to me, there's a little bit of a gap in terms of the performances that they were had. And I'd have to have Jameis Winston at the very top of the list in terms of the ones that wowed me the most.
Word to Nikki's cousin on that one here. I'd probably go Kyler Murray on this, Chris. And I think we almost have to separate him, right? Because the expectations are a little different for him as a former number one overall pick who's still on that rookie contract here. From the rest of this group, though, I still don't know if I can buy in on Jalen Hurts in the way that others are ready to. I thought Nick Sirianni and that coaching staff did an outstanding job of putting that whole team in spots to win. I think the run game is going to be fascinating to watch for them this year because now Miles Sanders has a quarterback that's going to hold that edge. Now they've got a healthy offensive line in a way that was decimated over the course of last season. But I still don't know how much, again, on the top end, I'm willing to say Jalen Hurts can be and prove himself to be like the long-term answer here. Because I think that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about him and Sam Darnold is those guys in particular. And I guess Teddy Bridgewater, they're on auditions for next year. Like, this is what these guys are, one-year rentals that are trying to show the organizations they're on, I'm going to be your guy next season. And quite frankly, I'm not sure if there's anything either of the three can do short of maybe Sam Darnold. He seems like the only one, I think, that's got a legitimate shot of being their quarterback come next season.
Well, it's interesting that you would say that because the Carolina Panthers were one of the two teams that were sniffing around Deshaun Watson right up until the regular season kicked off. So I don't know that David Tepper is in love with Sam Darnold the way that some of the other people around the organization may be. He feels like an owner that's still going to go out there and big game hunt for a franchise quarterback, somebody that's a big name, somebody that provides that star power. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. Even if Sam Darnold does play well, I wouldn't necessarily rule the Panthers out of the veteran quarterback market next offseason. But the one quarterback that we got to show some big love to is Teddy Bridgewater, man. He had the quarterback competition with Drew Lock in the preseason, and the guy flat out won that job, and then he came out in week one against the New York Giants, who were a top 10 defense from a year ago, and showed why he won that job. He was surgical, being able to bookend half with scores, and then he came out at the beginning of that second half, and he marched his team 16 plays, 75 yards, ends up converting a fourth down for a touchdown, and it's just unbelievable watching what he has become, what he's turned himself into, really playing point guard for that Denver Broncos offense that has a lot more weapons than people want to give them credit for.
They do, and Chris, that's still why, and I can't get this stuck out of my craw here. I just look at the fact that they passed on Justin Fields, and with the opportunity cost that's at risk there, I can't still understand why. Teddy Bridgewater's a very good player, but Justin Fields could have provided you that option for the next decade in a way I think they're still going to live to regret.
No question about it. And I was thinking the same thing when I was watching the Eagles mop up the Falcons down there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I mean, Justin Fields is one of those quarterbacks that they might lament passing on because this is a guy that's from their own backyard, and they decided that they were going to draft a tight end that ended up having four catches for 30 yards in that game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Makes no sense to me. But all of the quarterbacks on that list definitely improved their stock in my eyes and are worthy of being in consideration for having these eye-popping seasons. So I'm excited to see what all of them do the rest of the way. But Jameis Winston, for me, is at the top of the list.
Yeah, Jameis Winston, again, I said, I got to recalibrate my whole thought process on how high this New Orleans Saints team can fly with him at the helm. Coming up next, though, we'll take a look back at Monday Night Football one more time and find out if we've already seen the best of what Baltimore is going to be able to muster this season.